Welcome to the Novice Hunter Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Belknap. In this podcast, I search social media for experienced hunters that offer tips and advice to beginner hunters, such as myself, of how to be successful in the field. Whether you're duck hunting in the fall, turkey hunting in the spring, or looking for elk during the rut, this podcast will help you get started from buying equipment to scouting areas and to find your next successful hunt.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Scotty?
Doing well. Got her to work.
Yeah, it's a different little app here, but it's really handy, really useful.
No, that's cool. I think I might have to start one too, you know?
Of course. Yeah. It's so simple nowadays with the technology and this app. So I've been using it for the last few months and it's been great.
Cool. So
I'm actually from Idaho.
Okay.
Where are you from, Scotty? You're from the Northeast, right?
Yeah, I'm from New Hampshire.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. Southern New Hampshire, kind of right on the coast, and right on the Massachusetts line. So we really don't have too many mountains right where I am, but 2 hours north, that's kind of where I started snowboarding, and I do pretty much all my hunting in around the.
Oh, really cool.
You guys done with turkey? You guys have turkey up there?
We do, actually. About 20, 30 years ago, they brought them in, and yep. Since then, the numbers have increased dramatically. So I went turkey hunting a few weeks ago with my dad because he drew a tag, but we didn't see anything, didn't hear anything. But that was the only chance I got to go. So
okay, gotcha.
I just saw your Instagram post that you tagged out a couple of days ago.
It's funny. I went out to Oklahoma with one of my sponsors, Mountain Ops. They do like supplements and stuff like that.
Yep, I'm familiar with them.
Yep. So I went up with those guys to do a turkey hunt. And I actually did not get one there.
Oh, really?
But yeah. My first day hunting here, when I got back, I ended up getting one. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. That was kind of funny. I was getting up. I wasn't exactly sure. You know, I hadn't had time to scout. But, you know, there's a lot of birds. There's a lot of birds in around where I live. So I figured I'd just go out before dark and kind of go to areas and start owl calling. You know, I stepped out my front door and mm-hmm. I heard a gobble. So then I went, found the bird and killed him. Yeah. It was kind of funny.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, luck there.
Didn't have to go all the way to Oklahoma for that, huh?
Exactly. No. Yeah.
But that's the funny thing about hunting. You never know when you get chances like that.
Totally.
So in where you're from, I imagine there's a lot of deer, and is there any elk in your area, or is it just mainly deer? And
no, yeah, it's just we have deer, turkeys, you know, obviously all the waterfowl. We have bear south of us and north of us, just not really roam through, black bear, that is.
Right.
We have, obviously, coyotes. We have moose just a little bit farther north, maybe about 30 minutes north. And the farther north you go, the more prevalent they are. Yeah, that's really about it.
That's really cool. Yeah. I'm not familiar with any of the hunting conditions out east. I'm only here in the Rocky Mountains. So, you know, elk, deer, moose, bear. They're actually where I live. I'm in eastern Idaho. And we're getting a lot more grizzly bears.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're coming. They're moving south. So,
damn.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, well, you're in some badass country there. You have friggin' grizzly bears and mountain lions and
oh yeah.
All the scary stuff. And do you have wolves there too?
We do, actually. And they're, you know, really, I'm really close to Yellowstone, so there's this huge ongoing controversy and discussion of wolves introduced into Idaho, into Montana, and yeah, there's I don't know. It's an interesting topic.
What's your thoughts on it?
Well, my thoughts are, you know, wolves, obviously they hunt in packs and they kill. A lot of them, you know, kill just to kill. However, there is a need for predators, but as far as how many, I wouldn't know that off the top of my head, but I see a need for them, but I mean, they also need to be managed at the same time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. If we're going to manage the, you know, elk herds and stuff, we need to, closely, you know, manage the wolves too.
Yeah. There's a, you know, I see, and I go, my brother, he used to live about 2 hours north of me in a really nice hunting spot. It's called Salmon, Idaho. And, there's a lot of people up there that wear shirts, or I guess I've seen a couple, not a lot, but I've seen a couple of shirt people that wear shirts or have stickers on their cars that say smoke a pack a day. And it's a crosshair over a wolf. And I'm like, I don't know if that's entirely necessary, but so.
Right. No, it's funny. So like, I guess it's like in a spot where, you know, Yellowstone, you obviously can't hunt, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Then wolves are, you know, they make sense, you know. But as far as, you know, wolves in areas that you can hunt, I mean, you know, humans do a great job at managing, and, you know, and we would love to, you know, there's a lot of people who can't draw a tag, who want to go out hunt and, you know, and put meat on the table.
Right.
You know, cause there's not enough tags, and, you know, obviously wolves would not be helping that situation. So.
Exactly. So it's a, you know, there's a balance that needs to happen. And, you know, I don't know if it's being one way, or I don't know if it's offset one way or the other.
Right. Wolves are pretty badass. I shouldn't be speaking because I have no clue. It's on the whole other side of the country for me, but, well, good luck with that.
Yeah. It's interesting, but, so let's talk a little bit more about your association with Mountain Ops. So I like my podcast is the Novice Hunter podcast. So I've been hunting for just a little while, have yet to kill an animal. That's my goal this coming fall is, yep. You know, with social media, I've been looking up different outdoor companies, and Mountain Ops seems to recruit, you know, people at the top of their sport, top of their game. And, you know, obviously you are there. I don't know if you've heard of Cameron Haynes. Ava Shockey from Cabela's. So how did you get affiliated with Mountain Ops? I'm really interested in that.
I was sponsored by Weatherby Firearms. They had a team. They put together a team, actually kind of similar to what Mountain Ops was doing. They kind of took, you know, top athletes from their, you know, respective sports. You know, we have like Chad Mendes from the UFC,
right?
Professional bullfighters, you know, NFL players, MLB players, and then I snuck in the mix there. So I ended up being good friends with Chad Mendes through Weatherby, and he was sponsored by Mountain Ops. And I was kind of seeing him, you know, him post and stuff on Instagram, and I would see them at, you know, at trade shows and stuff. And I was kind of a big fan of what they do and how they do it and their style. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just been, you know, reaching out, and I was more or less just like, you know, the squeaky wheel, you know, I was annoying guys like, hey, like I want to be part of, you know, of your crew, your team. And they're awesome. I mean, those guys are awesome. I just ended up, you know, doing that turkey hunt, with Matt, and he's the CEO, and he's a badass dude, and Jordan the owner, so really, really happy to be a part of the team.
Is it Jordan Herbertson? Is that his name, Jordan Herbertson?
Yeah, yep, Jordan, yep.
And they're based out of Salt Lake, Utah, right?
Yep, out of Salt Lake.
So did you get a chance to go to the Outdoor Expo in Salt Lake? You're probably busy with snowboarding, I'd imagine.
I actually went there a few years ago. I went to the, I think it was the Mule Deer Foundation.
Okay.
I was there with Weatherby, and actually worked out perfect. I was filming like a backcountry part, you know, with our snowmobiles going in the backcountry and filming jumps and lines and stuff like that. And so I kind of got to go to the show and hang out, and then I snowboarded, you know, at the end and in the beginning. So it was, yeah, kind of worked out.
Pretty cool. That. That's pretty like, set yeah. up there.
It really is. Yeah.
Well, cool. Like I said, I'm from Eastern Idaho, so I'm really close to Jackson, and I know you have a good ties with Travis Rice over there.
Yep.
If you don't mind, could you tell us a little bit more about your riding experience with Travis? I mean, I also want, you know, I'm also a fellow snowboarder, so I love talking about hunting and snowboarding at the same time. So
nice.
How did you, I mean, I've seen your film and I've seen your parts in That's It, That's All, The Art of Flight.
Yep.
I haven't seen, as far as other ones, I haven't seen, but trying to just give us a backstory of how you got affiliated with snowboarding initially, as far as when you were younger, and then how has it progressed in up until now?
Jeez, that's a long story. You know, I'm gonna have to skip some parts. But so I started when I was young, at seven. You know, I skied before, started snowboarding at seven, and you know, I was a weekend warrior. Would go up to the mountains. My dad and, you know, my mom were cool enough to drive me 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
So I started competing on, you know, regional level, started doing well. One thing led to another. I kind of I qualified for nationals, and then I ended up winning nationals. And it's funny, it's actually like I've been competing with Sean White forever too, so he was on the podium with me back in the day, and did that for like another year, and decided to start trying my hand at a professional contest. So just honestly, I mean, you know, just years of doing contest and filming and kind of creating a name for myself kind of gave me the opportunity to get my foot in the door. You know, I've wanted to be a pro snowboarder since I was a little kid, and there was pretty much no plan B for it.
Right.
I absolutely love snowboarding. I loved it a little bit more when it wasn't a job.
Right. Just
going out and had aspirations of being professional. But let's see. Yeah, you know, I got lucky in a few different contests. You know, from Duke Tours to Grand Prix to the Olympics, X Games. Yeah, so I mean, I would always do like a 50-50. So I would like film 50% of the year, which is super fun. Make a snowboard part, and then compete another 50. But
is that common between snowboarders? Because it seems like there's maybe a division. Maybe it's just my perspective, but it seems like there's those that just focus on competition, and there's those that just focus on filming. Is your 50-50, is it common or is it more rare?
Yeah, so it's actually been changing. You know, it used to be kind of common, right? And then there was kind of only a handful of people that could kind of do both. Either you were skilled enough or you had, you know, really good style to go out and film. But the, you know, the competition has gotten so heavy nowadays that you really got to focus on one or the other, you know, and then more specifically one discipline like half pipe or slope style, you know, and kind of commit yourself to that. So that's kind of where it's at now, but it used to be a little more common. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pros or majority of the pros who just film video parts, and, you know, make snowboard movies and shoot photos for magazines and you know, kind of live their life in front of the lens instead of in front of the judges. So
interesting.
Yeah. That's filming is a lot more fun. That's for sure. From doing both. I never really loved competing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would kind of dedicate, you know, a full week to it, for your two runs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather be out filming using that week and you know, it's a lot less pressure. Yeah, just an overall better experience, really.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So now that we're in the summer months, what's your schedule like now? Obviously, do you travel to the Southern Hemisphere? What are your plans now?
Yeah, we usually go to Mount Hood either Mount Hood for a week to a couple of weeks to a month. And then it's a toss-up between, you know, South America, Argentina, or Chile, or New Zealand. I love New Zealand. The people are awesome. Food's great. Beautiful there. Yeah, it's kind of a toss-up, just kind of whatever. You know, a lot of sponsors or board companies or clothing companies, you know, have their new line and they want to shoot it in for their catalog in the new snow. So that usually brings us down there.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go to – my wife has this huge dream of hers to go to Australia and New Zealand. And so, you know, one day we hope to go down there and see all the – you know, I mean, Australia and New Zealand have a lot to offer, so.
Totally. New Zealand, I mean, like, talk about hunting there too. I mean, you just –
oh, yeah.
There's no seasons. Everything that they have there on the island has been brought in. So they really don't regulate it. There's no natural predators. They don't have any coyotes or anything like that. So they have everything from stags, you know, fallow deer, you know, wild goats, tar, chamois. But yeah, they're pretty stacked with animals there. It's beautiful.
So no predators. I mean, so is it just managed by hunters, or is it just managed? Obviously, it's managed by wildlife and what they do. But I mean, is hunting the only form of regulation then?
Yeah, hunting. But they also have like a really bad rabbit population, I guess.
Oh, really?
So I think they do a lot of poisoning from airplanes and stuff like that. And they also do, because they have a lot of hogs there too.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll shoot thousands and thousands from a helicopter.
Sounds like Texas.
yeah, totally. I think I was talking with one of our heli pilots because we were doing some heli boarding out there, and he's like, "Yeah, I just got back from a trip off this smaller island where, you know, the wild boars had kind of overtaken." He's like, "Literally, my hands are sore from reloading just thousands and thousands of rounds." And the government pretty much hired him to go in there and clean the population out. So yeah,
that's wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I can't imagine that happening with, like, if you take that same picture, a helicopter just mowing down these wild boars or feral pigs. I just can't imagine that with like any other species. Like, I couldn't imagine it with elk. I couldn't imagine it with deer. I couldn't imagine it with, you know, like red stags. So it's crazy to think that there are that many wild dogs needing to take down with, you know, aircraft machine guns.
Right. I know. It's kind of crazy. It's a little savage, but it kind of, you know, it has to be done.
There's no other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Unless you want to, you know, do it terrible and spread chemical between them and other animals, which is a terrible idea.
I know, this stinks. Yeah, they think they do have, they have to do some poisoning for the rabbits.
Right.
Dang. Or they should bring in the old coyote, and I would save them a lot of hassle.
Yeah, no kidding. So
yeah,
have you had the chance to, or the opportunity to hunt in New Zealand or Australia?
I've done a hunt in New Zealand. I was at the end of one of my snowboard trips, and I had like a day or 2 days before my flight, and one of the snowboarders down there from is the owner of Lethan Valley Trophy Hunts. They have all kinds of huge stags. Anyone who's listening to this doesn't know what a stag is. It's pretty much like an elk, but the antlers are pretty much, I mean, in my opinion, really cool.
Mm-hmm. They're very. If I look at them, you kind of think of like what is it? Like, it's not exactly the same, but kind of the same formation as a caribou, as far as the top. Not extremely similar, but kind of.
Yep.
Not as many times as an elk, for sure.
Yep, totally. So I went down there, and I went for a management hunt, because a trophy hunt would be pretty damn expensive, and
mm-hmm.
you know, was on a budget down there, so it was like $500 to shoot a management fallow deer, which I wanted to do. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I ended up getting a good fallow deer down there. not the most, you know, challenging of hunts because there's quite a few of them. And,
Hunting
with rifle, yeah, no hunting pressure, you know, all the factors, align for, you know,
are they, you know, I've been listening or a lot of most social media, with different accounts, people have been hunting access deer, and all of them have said that they're always turned on because they used to be prey of tigers. Is do fallow deer have the same type of like reaction time as like a whitetail or an axis deer, or is they're just always so fast, or is it just a little more relaxed because there is no pressure?
You know, I don't really know, to be honest. That was kind of like my one and only encounter with them, so I can't really I couldn't give you a an accurate answer.
Okay.
But,
no problem. Yeah. No problem. It's more experience than I've ever had. So.
Yeah. So what do you have for tags, or what are you gonna hunt this year?
Like I said, I've already tried for turkey. Well, I tried to help my dad with the turkey. But in the fall, I recently purchased a compound bow, and I've been really interested in getting elk during the rut. So this yep. year it'll be towards the end of September. One of my fellow coworkers, he was actually going to maybe join us, but he was too busy. But he has been scouting an area that's just about an hour and a half, 2 hours north of where I live. And
yep.
he said he had a lot of success back there in that area last year. And that was just there with a general elk tag. So
right.
I'm really considering going with him. I've also talked to my brother, who's been archery hunting more than I have, and trying to set up a hunt with him. So right now I'm mainly focused on elk, maybe a mule deer.
Yep.
But right now I really want to focus on an elk.
Nice. Have you been, do you know how to call? You've been practicing calling and shooting and stuff like that?
No, yeah, I haven't practiced calling yet. I don't even have a call, so.
Right.
Do you have any recommendations as far as brands I should look into?
You know, honestly, I've never been on an elk hunt before. I put in a tag for Montana, and I'm going out with one of my buddies who guides out there. And
Remy Warren, by chance?
No. I'm not exactly sure where it is, but so yeah, I don't know how to call, but I'm gonna pick that up before I head out. It seems pretty simple, like a simple cow call.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I've been trying to practice shooting. There's a range not too far from my house, but just with work and with two kids, and it's, you know, it's hard to schedule the time sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
If I were you, if you're just getting into it, it's all. I mean, it's so much about form, and so many little things make a huge difference in archery.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I would, you know, cut out a, you know, maybe a 30-minute block or whatever and see if he can meet with one of the, you know, the pro staffs down there and just kind of pick his brain. You know, he'll watch you shoot and he'll give you pointers and stuff like that. Cause you can kind of get into some bad habits that you know, that you would friggin' hate to have for a while, starting off. So I would suggest that.
Well, I appreciate that. Do you have any, have you developed a bad habit and then changed it before as far as archery?
Yeah. Yeah. It's super hard, super hard to break. They have a founding. I want to talk because you're so, new into it. I almost don't even want to put this in your head, but, there's a thing out there for archery. It's called target panic. and it's essentially like you have the pin settled on the X, you know, and you know, you kind of pull the shot, you kind of pull the release, you know, either quick or it's kind of coming up. You almost have like anxiety for like the bullseye. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. I've experienced a similar thing with just as far as rifle shooting.
Right.
It's not,
I believe it. Yeah. I'm sure it can happen. You know, definitely happens with guns as well, but it's something where, it's more mental than anything. And, you know, it's really hard to break once you kind of have it. So doing the proper way, actually being surprised by the shot every single time, is super crucial in archery. So
All right. Yeah, I'll remember that. I've heard that before, where if you're drawn back and you just yank on the trigger on the release, you're going to jump and your arms are going to move, and obviously you're not going to be on target. So
right.
Yeah, but it's
a funny thing too, because it's like, all right, you're like, and be surprised by the trigger. It's like, well, then how am I supposed to, you know, how am I supposed to have the pin on the bullseye or on the vitals and have it go off right when I want it to, you know?
Right.
It's kind of a funny thing to think about, but you know, your arm's always trying to float. You're just trying to float it, you know, and trying to keep it in the center, you know? And, you know, say you're going to go squeeze off and it was kind of off a little bit. Your arm's still kind of calculating to get back to that, to the bullseye. And that slight little movement usually puts it pretty damn close.
Do you use a thumb release or a trigger release?
I use it's actually like a back tension release, and that's due to you know, the kind of the target panic that I had when I was a kid. But you pretty much squeeze the back your back scapula until the shot goes off.
Really?
Yeah. You squeeze your back, and then just having that movement, you know, sets the shot off.
Well, I've never heard of that type of release.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Who makes it? I'll look it up.
I think it's made by Scott. Could be making that up, but I think. Oh no, Carter. It's called
Carter. Never heard of Carter. Carter
Evolution, I think it's called, or Carter. No, you know what it's called? It's Carter Honey, I believe.
Carter Honey?
Yeah.
So just a so you're saying just with a slight movement with your spec your let's see. Oh, back tension, is that what it's called?
Yep.
Interesting. Oh, okay. I've seen a very similar style. I guess the thumb release is a very similar model, but
yeah, totally. Yep. You can do. Yeah. You can wrap your thumb around it for one of them. I don't have that model, but you wrap your thumb around it and you do the exact same thing. You could set the shot off with your thumb, or you could just keep her, you know, wrapped around, and then you pull your shoulders back and that, you know, set the shot off.
I'll have to look into that too. Cause I've only been used to a trigger release. So that's the only one I'm familiar with, but
right.
You know, I'd like to get familiar with other things and see which one's right for me. So
yeah, totally. Yeah, mess around, see what feels good, you know. You know, I had to go to back tension. I always shot finger release, trigger release, and I switched to back tension 2 years ago, and I love it, but it was kind of a necessity for me to break my target panic. So
right.
Yeah.
So how long have you been archery hunting? You said ever since you were young. Is that what, I mean, since you're a teenager or before then? What's your progression as far as an archer? Yes.
So I've been, I actually got my first deer. It was a doe with my bow at 10. But I would always be in the tree stand and stuff with my dad, help him try to find deer and stuff like that. You know, since I can really remember, but, it was my dad who kind of got me into it and showed me the ways. And I've kind of, over the last 5 years, I've kind of took it next level, and hopefully I'm teaching him a thing or two nowadays.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So like for me, my dad, he hunted when he was younger, and I was when I was really young. He never took me with him, but he managed in Utah. He managed orchards. And he had deer problems. So deer would come in and eat the apples, peaches. So he made a deal with the Utah Fish and Game saying, look, I need to protect my crop. This herd of deer is just devastating my crop. So they had an agreement where he could actually hunt on the orchard property. But for every buck or doe that he killed, the meat would have to stay on the orchard.
Yep.
So he would make the kill, and then all of his workers would actually prepare the meat, and they'd store it in their freezer, and they would always have lunch, basically.
Oh, that's so perfect.
Yeah, and so because of that, yeah, he kind of got a little bit his mental was like, man, this is just, you know, this is too taxing. This is barely hunting because, you know, I'm not tracking them down. I'm not following them. I'm not even sneaking up on them. I'm just basically picking them off like a sniper, right?
Right.
So because of that, there was a kind of a period in my childhood where we didn't hunt at all. And then when I was a teenager, my dad started talking more about turkey hunting, especially because he loved turkey hunting when he was younger.
Yep.
And we actually never got the chance to go when I was younger. So just this past, like a month ago when I went with him, that was the first time I'd ever been turkey hunting with him. I've been hunting.
That's
with
cool.
Him. Yeah. But before that, you know, I've been elk hunting with him before, and we've scouted deer before, but we never saw any. But the closest that I've got, elk hunting is mainly what we've been doing the past few years, and it's been so much fun. Actually, in December, I drew a late cow tag, and we were up there on opening day, and you know, I got within range of we were using rifles, and I got within range. And I got that, like you were just saying, the target panic. I was getting buck fever on this cow elk, and
right,
you know, it was my first one ever, so I was as nervous as can be. And
hey, I don't blame. I still get nervous even when I shoot, even when I'm filling my doe tags back here.
Oh, really?
I think that's why. I think that's why I love it so much. You know, huge adrenaline rush. You know, I'll shake and stuff. Just like if it was a monster buck, you know? So, I mean, I hear you.
Yeah. So I took the shot and I wounded her, but I didn't take her down, and we tried to find her later and we never could. So it was kind of a sad deal, but it was a big learning experience for me.
Yep. Totally.
It was,
I wish you, me and Camo would have flown out there. Camo's a tracking dog. I have a little Jack Russell Terrier.
Mm-hmm.
And, the last few seasons we got into tracking. So if someone, you know, for example, like, you know, your cow, you wounded, you couldn't find it. You know, the dog smell obviously is unbelievable, and mm-hmm. can track it down for either they find it dead or can get you a second shot if you jump it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if it's legal there in Idaho. I know a lot of states, all states are, you know, every state's different, but.
In Idaho, you can't, from what I understand, you can't actually hunt deer or elk with a dog. However, I think you can track, because I have one of my dad's friends. He just got a breed of Labrador. I don't remember which, but he's going to train it to track blood.
Oh, awesome! So it's a lot of fun. I mean, I love it almost just as much as hunting. I've definitely put off a lot of hunts myself to go help find, find deer for people.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it should be utilized more, you know, cause for example, you know, a hunter will go out and we're finding deer that 100% no one would have found without the dog. You know, we're going like a mile, you know, in the thickest terrain ever, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, if that person didn't find it, then, you know, his tag would still be open and he would go and either wound or kill another deer, you know, so that, you know, that takes two, you know, right away.
Right.
And it's just, you know, finding the game, you shoot a cow or a buck, and to lose that, it's the worst thing ever. So,
yeah, it was, I think about it every day, ever since it happened. I've thought about the moment. I've thought about the shot that I took, and I think about it every single day.
Yeah. Where did you hit it? Do you know?
I think from away. So when I took my shot and she ran away, we saw her later with the rest of the herd, the rest of the cows.
Yeah.
And we could tell that she was limping. And I think I would have hit her probably just above the shoulder, probably closer to the spine, just by the way she was walking.
Okay. Yeah.
So it wasn't. So yeah, it was hard to see her go and run off, and then we never found her again. And plus, we were we were on public land, and then we saw the herd jump onto private land. But fortunately, we got permission to go over and look for her, but we never could find her after looking for her for a few hours. So,
right. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, so
I've been there before, though, man. That's the worst.
But at the same time, you know, I learned a ton, and it just gets me that much hungrier for this coming season, you know?
Totally.
So I'm just – and that's what, you know, that's part of the reason why – the main reason why I'm starting this podcast is just get – bounce ideas and get advice from fellow hunters that I can find on, you know, via social media.
Right.
Because it seems – I mean, I'm – as I'm just getting into the atmosphere or the audience of hunting, I'm noticing there's, you know – there's obviously a ton of people that hunt, and they put hunting in a good light, in a good message to the general public, which I believe is needed in today's day and age.
Yeah, big time. I mean, hunting's such a sensitive people, polarizing topic for so many people, and it's like, you know, it's like religion and politics. Yeah,
exactly. You know? Yeah.
And I totally understand, you know, like, believe it or not, I actually kind of, I mean, I understand where the anti-hunters come from. You know, it's like they love animals, you know, and they look at animals like human beings. You know, that's the difference where, you know, I split them. I love animals too. I love them. I respect them. I'm more knowledgeable of animals, how they work, what they eat, you know, times of the year than, you know, I'm sure any freaking anti-hunter out there. Because you have to know all that stuff to be a great hunter, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, knowledge is the biggest part of it,
right?
And where the hell was that going with this?
You know, I think we were just saying this.
It needs to be put in a good light for sure.
Yeah, and that's what that's what I've been looking for. That's who I've been trying to research. You know, I've gotten a lot of exposure from my brother and from my dad, because they have a lot more years of hunting under them than I do. But you know, I listen to podcasts, and I do research, and I look at harvest statistics online.
Yeah.
And like, for example, one of the podcasts I listen to, and I think that's been one that's been a gateway for a lot of people, is the Joe Rogan Experience.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, he's a good advocate. He's the man. He hunts, I think, a lot with Cam Haynes, and obviously knows my buddy Chad Mendes in the UFC. But
yep,
time into it.
Yeah, and because of his platform, I think he's like the most popular podcast, if I'm not mistaken. And so his platform, you know, he can put a big light on hunting for us, which is great.
Totally. Yeah.
And that's how I am.
He's the right guy for it too, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, just have they don't know. They don't really know about hunting. You know, they know that they like deer, you know, and they know hunters go out and kill them, you know, and that's a lot of times about all the, you know, all the people know who don't like hunting. But yeah.
Right. And like, and that's what I've been, since I started researching more about hunting and learning more about it, it's what a lot of people get anti-hunters, maybe they don't understand or they don't know about the knowledge, like you said, they don't have the knowledge of, is the carrying capacity of a habitat, or, you know, to manage certain elk numbers.
Right.
I mean, there has to be some of them have to die, and that has to be through either predators or through hunters.
Right.
In order to keep healthy herds. And so I was listening to, for one example, when I was listening to Joe Rogan podcast, he was interviewing Cam Haynes, and Cam Haynes mentioned that there are greater numbers of elk, deer, and wild game today than there were in the 1920s.
Right.
I think that's incredible, with, you know, the expansion of urban society, with the expansion of, you know, cities and everything, there are still more wild game in the United States than there were in the 1920s.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's all I think through,
like a good. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's mainly through conservation efforts through fish and game societies of each state, through the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, through the Mule Deer Foundation. I mean, it's just ducks
millions and minutes. Million from hunters. You know, dollars.
Yeah,
and mostly all from hunters.
Right. Yeah, and that's what the fish and game, and because all of our tags and licenses help fund those efforts.
Totally. I think like a good way to explain, you know, to someone who maybe doesn't understand it, or I mean, I guess, you know, kind of pick and choose, you know, your battles. But like, I tell people, you know, like, oh, well, like, why do you need to hunt? You know, like, you know, coyotes and stuff like that, you know, like nature balances itself out. And it's true. Like, you know, nature does balance itself out, but it goes in more drastic spikes. You know, if you were to look at it like a, you know, like a wavelength, you know, like the deer populations would go up, or whatever, elk populations would go up super high. They would reach their, you know, carrying capacity, you know, essentially they would eat all the food, and, you know, water holes would be, you know, overrun, and they, you know, potential for disease. And then they would crash super low, mm-hmm. and then build back up, you know, and crash, you know, and that happens over a period of, you know, a few years. But, you know, when you get hunters involved, and, you know, biologists know, you know, the certain number of animals and carrying capacity to give the tags out each year, it keeps, you know, the herd and the, you know, the population of whatever game you're hunting at an even level.
Right.
You know, why not? I love it. You know, you love it. And it's super lean, organic, free range, meat.
Right. And that's and for the audience that hasn't tried wild game, you're missing out.
Yeah, big time.
It's delicious meat. It's obviously very, very good for you. Full of protein, full of other vitamins and minerals. And, you know, a lot of people talk about through social media is, you know, there's a respect for the animal, and then there's an even greater fulfillment when you prepare the animal and harvest the animal and then serve that animal to your friends and family. You know, there's a sense of pride in there that is unique to hunting.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome, you know. It's really cool.
Right, and to go back to your Instagram post, you said you're turkey, your Thanksgiving is looking really good. What do you plan to do with that turkey? You gonna fry it? You gonna?
I actually lied. I already ate it.
couldn't resist. I imagine probably.
Yeah, I couldn't resist. I actually made fried turkey nuggets out of it. So I took the breast and whatever I could off the legs, I chopped it up in little chicken McNugget sizes and deep fried them with a little bit of garlic salt, and it's amazing.
Oh man, you're making me hungry.
I know, my mouth's kind of watering right now.
Yeah. That's really cool. So where are you calling us from? Are you back home or?
I'm back home right now. So I wrapped up my snowboard season. So I'm here in southern New Hampshire. Town called Southampton. Wrapped up my snowboard season a couple weeks ago, and I got nothing but time right now, you know. Usually like beginning of summer and all of fall is don't have anything going on, so I'm hanging out.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about more you now have a snowboard company, Lego Snowboards, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I started that a few years ago.
Can you tell me a little bit more about it? I mean, I looked online. It looks like you got some pretty good products on there. Just tell me a little bit more about what drove you to start this new business.
Yeah. I mean, I've always just really wanted to start a company. I thought it'd be really fun to, you know, put your name behind, you know, and I like business. And obviously I love snowboarding. So it goes hand in hand. It actually came about at a time where
You know, I got a contract from one of my old sponsors and wasn't quite good enough, you know? And I was like, you know what, this might be a perfect time to contract offer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this might be a great time to start my own company. And I'd love to, you know, I figured, you know, with my social media following on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, I could, you know, sell some boards, maybe just direct to consumer on, you know, online. So I reached out to one of my friends who's a master board designer, works at a factory, and we started making snowboards, and here we are. I just have two models. Keep it very simple. I don't want to like overwhelm myself, and you know, Lord forbid I cut into my hunting time.
of course not. Can't do that.
Right. So I have two models, and one's you know, all mountain, and one's more of a powder specific board, but can also rip all mountain too. But it's a lot of fun. Yeah, I just ship them right out of here, and you know, when I get an order, or you know, sell to a few shops here and there. But it's good fun.
So do you buy? I mean, I'm in a supply chain as a career. So I deal with raw materials, I deal with suppliers, manufacturers all day long. So I'm just also interested in how your business setup is. So do you buy
the factory does all that?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. They'll take an order and they'll get all their orders, you know, prior to buying their materials. So they have obviously, you know, understanding of what they need to make.
Right.
You'll give them 50%, you know, 50% down, and then 50%,
you know, delivery.
Upon delivery. And, like I said, you know, my friend works at the factory, so it makes it super easy. You know, I'm more or less just chatting with him, and we kind of do some experimenting here and there with some new boards and graphics and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So do you have the board shipped to your house and ship from your house, or do they ship direct from the manufacturer?
Yeah, right from my I ship them right from my house. It's like whatever, FedEx or UPS or however.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I'll check. I'm in the market for a new board. So
what are you riding right now?
It's a Ride Yukon.
No, it's junk. No, I'm just joking. No, I'm totally bland.
I've had it for quite a while. Let's see, I bought it in 2012, and it's really stiff and. I want to get something a little bit more flexible.
Right.
So, and I do like all mountain boards. I prefer an all mountain board over anything else.
Yep. Right on. Well, I'll hook you up with a promo code.
Perfect. That'd be great.
Get you on a Lego snowboard, you know?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to rep it.
I had a Realtree camo on one of my models last year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it came out awesome. I was pumped on it.
I was pretty much
all my pro models throughout the year, whether it's clothing or boards, I usually have some sort of element of either camouflage or hunting on there.
Cool.
But, you know, I got to tread lightly, of course, because, you know, not all people.
Yeah, especially in snowboarding too. I mean,
right.
And I guess in skiing and snowboarding, the audiences, they can be very what's the word? I mean, there's definitely environmentally conscious people in that sport. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Which is not. Well, I'm not. I mean, you know, I'm not discriminating against any of that. It's just that there's definitely that audience.
Yeah, I'm definitely the odd duck. I'm like, they're like, yeah, don't you like hunt and stuff? That's like, how does that work? You know, essentially,
right.
They have no idea,
right?
How, you know, my second lifestyle that I live back here.
Exactly. Yeah. Interesting. Do you have any other your snowboard friends? They also hunt with you, or is it kind of like completely opposite worlds?
No, completely opposite worlds. I'm trying to think. Literally like a handful of professionals out there who hunt. I can't even think of one off the top of my head right now. But yeah, I've never been hunting with,
with one of my buddies, but they know pretty much when fall rolls around. I don't answer any of my phone calls, and I pretty much ghost.
Nice.
Yeah.
So if you do draw on your elk hunt, when is that?
That's going to be, early September.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to get one with the bow when they're, when they're bugling in full rut. I actually heard that elk hunting is kind of like turkey hunting in a way, because you're calling, you're calling back. Mm-hmm. You use a lot of the same techniques as turkey hunting, except, however, a 1,000-pound elk is a little more badass than a 25-pound ugly-ass bird.
Actually, I was listening to another podcast. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called the Meat Eater Podcast
with
Steve Rinella, and they were talking about the same thing, that, there is a definite correlation between turkey hunting and elk hunting because of the calling and, obviously the stealthiness of keeping cover.
Right. I think like turkey hunting is such an, it's a challenge. It really is. I mean, if you were to ever shoot a turkey with your bow, call it in and shoot it with your bow without a blind, it's probably one of the most challenging things you can do. Your eyes are just unbelievable. And I think that if they could smell, you'd probably never kill one.
Right.
They're amazingly savvy. But their vision is just unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Move a finger at 60 yards and they've got you pinned down,
Right.
But, it's challenging for sure.
So with your hunt in Montana, is it going to be with an outfitter or is it just with a friend, and you guys are going to on public land?
Yeah, I'm going to go out with one of my buddies back here, and it's not going to be with an outfitter, but it's going to be in a good section, I believe, of public land, mm-hmm. where they have some good genetics there and some big bulls. So it was I don't really know what section it is in, but one of my friends who guides up there, said it's a good spot. So I'm trusting in him.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Scotty, I want to thank you for coming on and talking with me a little bit about hunting and snowboarding. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah. Great talking with you too. So what number of podcasts are you on right now?
You'll be number four.
Number four? Beautiful.
Yeah, so I'm just starting out getting, what I do is basically just reach out, just like how I reached out to you, is just with either an email or a direct message via Instagram. And
right.
Just start fishing until someone jumps on. So
cool. Well, best of luck with your hunt this fall.
Thank you very much.
Hope you draw a tag and...
Well, what
kill an animal.
Where I can go, I can actually just—it's an over-the-counter tag.
Oh, okay. So you're going to get it for sure.
I'm going to get the tag for sure.
Yeah.
And what I still want to do is put in to draw a tag for that same unit, but it'll probably be later. Like it'll either be a rifle hunt or a muzzleloader hunt. And so if I don't get the bull during archery season, I can I'll have more chances later to get him.
Right. Cool. Well, good luck.
Well, Scott, if you don't mind, go ahead and give out your social media tag so people can follow you.
Yeah, sure. Pretty much, I think it's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm more, I use Instagram all the time, but you can follow my adventures and what I'm up to. And just look up at Scotty Lago, Scotty Lago.
Perfect. All right, Scotty, we'll let you go, and good luck with next adventures.
Thank you very much. Good chatting.
You too. See you. Bye.
Bye.